Oh, yeah, something like...
Really bad taste, man. So that was the worst era of music in my life.
Oh, the 80s?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was a wasteland. But that's a story for another time.
That is a story for another time. Today, we do have a serious story, and the first part of the story is that you are listening to KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor sitting obviously opposite me, and me, I'm Joe Uris, and we have a guest with us today, Adam Sanchez, who is a teacher at Madison High School. Oh, my goodness, a teacher. And we're going to talk about what could very well turn into a serious, long-range, awful, ghastly, if you're a parent, really scary, teacher strike here in Portland. Portland Association of Teachers is in a bargaining situation with the Portland Public Schools that seems to have no clear possibility of resolution at this moment. Now, I want to point out just off the top of my head that often these situations are darkest before the dawn. And it's very possible that somebody will realize a solution to the problems. But so far, we haven't seen the solution. And our perspective, well, I should say mine. I don't know that Abe shares my perspective. But my perspective is that we are seeing this as another example of the enormous rollback of the wealth and comfort and in America. Teachers are the largest still organized group of workers in the United States, I believe. And they are intellectual workers, and they are also dealing with children in a society where things can be very, very, very difficult for children. So we're going to talk. I'm going to let Adam kind of represent the position of the Portland Public Schools, and I want to make something clear to our audience. I have not invited the Portland Public Schools or their representatives to be here today. My personal position, and I don't want to include Abe in this, is having been involved in teaching for many, many years and having been a major player in the OE, I am pretty much convinced that this school administration lacks credibility. And I'll say that, and they can sue me, maybe.
Okay.
And I at least, am supporting the position of the workers in the Portland Public Schools. And we've invited Adam to talk a little bit about what the issues are in this labor dispute and also to discuss really what's happening in education in a larger sense in the United States. So I guess, Adam, I want you to begin by talking about where the agreement and disagreement with the schools exists and what you see is happening. Also, what you see is the strategies, particularly of the public schools.
All right. I think the differences have been narrowing since December. We both came into bargaining with very different proposals. The district was asking for somewhere in the area of over 70 takebacks in their first proposal.
Now, what's a takeback?
Takeback is something that we have won in our contract or fought for in our contract that the district wants to erase. And in fact, their first proposal erased 30 pages from our contract. Mm-hmm. And we also came in with a very different proposal. We came in with a proposal around that had a preamble called "The Schools Portland Students Deserve." It called for lowering class sizes. It called for wraparound services. It called for an end to the misuse of standardized testing. It calls for ending the racist school closures, a host of things that the district then claimed were permissive issues and refused to bargain over. And then in December, up until December, we had no decision makers at the table. And then when we went into mediation in December, Carol Smith, the superintendent, came and sat down at the proposal. And then we started making some headway. And right now, we seem to have stalled again, though, you know, I think we're still hopeful that we can reach a resolution before a strike. Really what's on the table now is, I mean, I would say the central issue is around workload, is that the district has kind of tried to sell us that returning to the status quo on workload we're trying to get rid of this cap that we have on the number of students a teacher can have, which is 180.
Wait, 180?
Wow.
Which is an absurdly high cap to begin with, yes. You know, and I at the school board meeting last night, I mentioned that, you know, if you have 180 students and assign them an essay and spend 10 minutes grading each one, that adds an extra 30-hour work week to your day. So the school board returned that to us, right? Returned that cap to us and said it was a concession on their part. And we said, you know, as we've been saying from the beginning, that we want actually class size reduction.
Well, wait a minute. Why should they write essays anyway? I mean, what, they don't need to read and write. Oh, wait, this is the schools. Never mind. Sorry. Go ahead.
It's true. And, you know, and I think that's actually a really important point, that we don't want education to be just about bubbling in A, B, or C, that they have to learn, students need to learn to write and read in order to kind of really engage in the most important questions of the day, right? We are, as a society, are facing some huge questions, and teachers want to give our students the ability. It's simply impossible with the level of, you know, 180 students is way too much. And so the PAT, the Portland Association of Teachers, came in with what we thought was a new proposal that would get us to an agreement, which, you know, concretely said, here's where you have the money. They found millions of dollars, by the way. They're not in a budget crisis, as they have been in past years. They have decided to up their reserves to 7% at a time where most districts are lowering their reserves to 3%. They are refusing to put that. They've funded, you know, high-priced lawyers, a $15,000 a month labor consultant.
Wait, hold it right there. Somebody is being paid $15,000 a month to be the labor consultant for the Portland Public Schools with my tax dollars?
Yep. And her name is Yvonne Deckard. Was hired in a no-bid contract. There's many news stories out there if you Google it. And she's been heading up this negotiation strategy.
Good gig if you can get it.
Yeah.
$15,000 a month.
I should do that.
So I want to make sort of a broad observation about the state of union negotiations around the country, and then a couple questions about this specific situation. In either the private or the public sector, it seems that whenever there's a budgetary situation in which something has to give, the finger is pointed at the unreasonable wage or salary demands of workers, along with their unreasonable pension demands, such as they are, or, you know, retirement demands. That's always where the belt tightening needs to happen, or so seems to be the prevailing message that we receive. So my question to you, I guess I have two questions to you, one of which, like many others around the country, is facing they're perennially short of money. But you're saying that's really not the case right now, as not as much as it has been in the recent past. Given that the district is doing, and given that you guys are being asked to make concessions with your wages, with your retirement, has there been a commensurate willingness in wages and retirement
in order to bridge the gap? In fact, they've gotten, you know, quite large raises over the last few years, much larger than teachers have gotten. You know, I think what you're saying is absolutely this is true. The particular education is funded by design, right? It's not an accident. This is in the nation. I think we're fifth worst in the nation. They have special legislative new sessions to, you know, have new corporate tax breaks for, but there's no special legislative session of class size in our classrooms. And so for a really long time, teachers in Portland have taken concession after concession. I mean, someone sent me a list of just all the things. Over the last 20 years, it's pretty incredible. The pay cuts we've taken, the money we've given on health after contract, because there's this idea, that we're a budget crisis because the state, nothing is right now funding schools, but the thing is right now, actually saved a lot of crisis. They actually the state robbed the public employee pension funds, and so they gave that money to the school district to lower them to lower class sizes. The Portland public that gives actually the Portland public schools the opportunity to say, hey, look, next year we promise to put 80 educators right. back into the classrooms, but that's actually what the state has instructed them to do, and they have found that they still have on top of that that they are refusing to spend in the classroom, and so that's what the PAT's newest proposal is about. It's about saying, hey, you have that money. There is a huge crisis in our classroom right now. Our teachers' workload relief, and to give our students a better
justifying their tight-fistedness with that 7% reserve.
You know, I think they heard a very good justification. I haven't heard a very good kind of justification besides what they drum beating the proposal that they've given us is fair. They've said that in the Oregonian, they've said that, et cetera. But I haven't heard a good justification for them why now that they have asking for teachers to take concessions.
Well, I want to go through these things now.
Concessions.
Well, I want to go through these things that happened in education over the last few years. Which is multiple choice, the mass use of multiple choice. Because I would be evaluated on what my students show on those tests, would be to teach to the test, for example. But that wouldn't necessarily be, for example, I, like you, have taught a very good history. I don't think it would be a very good idea that I strategize around, what the test is going to be in American history. Can you talk a little bit about this history? Can you talk a little bit about this bubble test thing?
Sure. I mean, I think the standard the test being used, tests are being used as a to school students as failures and teachers as failures and privatize and charterize whole schools and in some cases whole school systems. You see that happening in Philadelphia right now. We saw that in New Orleans after Hurricane and in Indiana. The person who's at the top right now of in the Obama administration, Duncan, the Secretary of Education, Chicago, made a name for himself in Chicago, closing about 10 public schools a year and handing them over to nonprofit or private charter operators. Government policy. It's policy of both parties. We know that a test tells us more about a student's zip code than it does about their achievement. These stand to be pushed. A lot of even more so, and a lot of nationally to these common core state standards, or which are bringing in a new barrage of tests, there's a whole debate around that. I think in essence what it does is it ups the amount what students are expected to do, right? And so it's setting the classroom, actually putting more resources in the classroom, so it's setting the bar higher. So these schools are set up to fail, private operators can swoop in and privatize them and charterize them. I think we're lucky to have in Portland that we have vibrant public schools, and that for the most part, I think we've been able to stave that off. But I'm very worried with this new barrage of tests.
My memory is that schools with a memory. With a typically less incomed student body, for example, Roosevelt High School, a good example, had social workers and others involved in reaching out to students perhaps who were homeless, students who had very difficult home situations, and a whole host of other problems, to make those people able to be part of the educational process, a kid coming out of relative poverty or complete poverty, has the opportunity through education to rise in the socioeconomic system. When that aid, that particular aid that's necessary so that a kid can focus his or her life, you really have standing, and my understanding, and you can correct me on this, is that in social worker, they've gotten rid of the social worker aspect. Is that true?
Familiar with the particular situation at Roosevelt, but that was one of the things that the Oregon laid off who was hired and specifically on their school improvement grant, and at the same time as the district was hiring, this $15,000 a month consultant for labor negotiations.
Yeah, a consultant is of course very annoying. Anybody who earns an ordinary living, on the other hand, you know, I power strategy to bring in a powerful person to represent them, and yet to keep administration between and the negotiation as the administration and the administration process. But it is very, when you come, it's very kind of fair incomes. But I look at the situation of schooling and I think about the fact that we see a constant growth, and you mentioned this earlier, of charter schools, which essentially are union busting institutions. You see the increase of interest in private parochial schools, places like Catlin Gable and Oregon Episcopal. And I think about that, and I think, well, gee, if you have the money, and is to be relatively selfish and say, well, the hell with the public schools. Now, when you pull out of the public school, educated and successful classes, and marginalized, only for those who are marginalized in the economy, there's an inevitable consequence. The models change, the of the teaching changes, the sense of hopeful and not less hopeful changes in on the part of the students changes, and you end up, class-based system. And am I understanding really what's going on here?
I think in response to that, the wealthy, the 1%, whatever you want, I think they know what's good for their schools because they send their kids that schools, class sizes, have art, PE, music, art, PE, are able to provide all those things for those kids. Those are the private schools. In fact, to boycott standardized tests of the wealthy. I think that's important. They're for the other kids. What the Portland teachers contract is about, and what our union's trying to do, and I think the students and the parents who have supported us, is schools. Say that all schools deserve that. I mean, even look at where Carol Smith came from, Open Meadow. It has small class sizes.
Wait a minute, isn't that a private school?
It's an alternative system. Yeah.
It's a nonprofit, and I think it's largely grant-funded. Okay. I could be wrong about
that. Yeah, but there's smaller class. You know, right now, one of the things that we're saying is a longer school day, and we're saying before you want a better school day before you put money into a longer school day. And in fact, at Open Meadow, they have a shorter school day public school do now in the Portland public schools because they know what matters is during that class time.
You guys have done a pretty good job here in the outlining the. For lack of a better term, an assault on the integrity of public education in this country, the transition to their fully or partially privatized education. I think part of that effort, a consistent demonization of public school teachers like of public school teachers like yourself. I'm sure you've heard it before. You get off in the middle of the afternoon. Oh, you get the summer off. Oh, you guys are just lazy sponges and on and on and on. Now, I'm friends with every single teachers. And every single one of them takes a great deal of work home with them. Every single donates a nice chunk of that summer break to her next school year. So what I'm wondering is, in light of this, what's your thing is in light of this, what's your sense of the general support for you guys? Do they buy that whole line, or do they buy that whole line, or do they believe that you guys are hardworking, intelligent, and educated, who really want to do your jobs and educate your pupils?
I think the parents support us. In Portland, work that we do, I mean, in Portland, 50 teachers spend an average of 55 hours a week, nearly more than 20.
55?
And they're paid for 55 hours.
Wow.
And some much more than that. You know, I see teachers at Madison constantly there after hour, hours of unpaid to do your job, because it's impossible to do your school day. I mean, it's in the, when you're talking about, I mean, it's simply impossible when you're talking about planning engaging curriculum, when you want to individualize instruction, when you want to even just grade papers, it's impossible to do in the school day.
Yeah. Opportunity to our callers. We are, after all, talk radio. The number to call, 231-8187. I really hope, is that right now?
I'm lost in the world of
sorry,
education.
You haven't been to school for a long time.
I really want to hear. I really want to hear from people. I think you should direct your questions to us or to our guest. And I think that you know, you can, whatever your positions, you should make them clear up front, and then we'll go on with. Let's take our first conversation. So let's take our first call. You're on the air.
How are you guys?
We're all right.
How are you guys?
We're all
right. Listen, of course, my position would be definitely with the teachers, and ultimately, you know, first of all, with the fact that, and you know, the fact that our education system is broken down is just part of what's going on in the entire United States, where I think we've seen some degree or another. But basically, what's come down to the fact is, I understand that in education. Is that correct? Maybe a little lower?
I don't think any of us here can answer that for sure. I know that the United...
Although, I will say that some of those numbers are fudged a little because the other thing is that in the United States, we have one of the highest child poverty rates, and don't count for income level when you're talking income level, you know, about, you know, achievement. And I think when you actually, and you show those numbers, and you show where we're at compared students income level of our students, actually where we, in some respects.
Well, see, my point is this, is, as well as our police force and basically our public services, you know, the people who are running them and the people who are changing them and the people who are keeping the teachers from teaching, and which is not fair. I mean, if it is not fair, I mean, 40 hours they should be paid, and if they work another 15 they should be paid for it. There's just no way around it with all the, and when you're barraged with all these other expenses like consultant school and et cetera, you know, I mean, at the very least spell ineptness of the people who are, you know, in the government. At this point, it's criminal. At this point, it's when you try and wing them or a system into something that is not serving the people intentionally. You know, I mean, you have ineptness, which you could go to the polls about. But when it's, which I think intentionally, at this point,
are you suggesting
say it is?
Well, no, are you suggesting that there's a conspiracy?
You can call it anything you want. You can call it anything you want. Prevail, but I mean, this situation prevails all over the country. It's being done by, if it's being done by, you know, a large want charter schools. And who want teachers rules, and who want teachers working for $10 an hour? Then simply, what's going on is this ineptness that can be taken care of? This ineptness that can be, or is it a criminal conspiracy?
Well,
keep or put us into a situation.
I'm going to leave you and that as a rhetorical question.
Right, but I think us, the teachers and the students, and the public answering questions of like, okay, so we're going to slip in this consultant into $50,000 a year consultant into your why are we not addressing this as what I'd like to hear.
Okay,
and that's what I'd like to hear addressed.
All right, I'm gonna let you go then.
Okay,
it's almost a meta issue. What's happening nationally? What's happening nationally? Attacks on wages, attacks on working people. Attacks on working people in almost every sector of the economy, a real decrease in interest on the part of workers, and certainly an effort to destroy organized labor. Do you think that what's happening in Portland? Do you think that what's happening in Portland is a reflection of that? The role of the Portland public. What's the role of the Portland public schools in all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw it with the Portland Business Alliance sending just a week or two ago, tell them they're doing a great job. I think it's very clear that there is. A vested interest nationally in breaking organized sector unions as the largest organized sector of working people. And I think there's lower the standard of a move to kind of lower the status to compete with these like China and to bring in order to do that, manufacturing jobs. And I think in order to do that, they have to break in class and the teased force within the working a big part of that.
Now that's just a head scratcher for me. Is that a class thing? I would appreciate that the Portland Business Alliance would appreciate a better educated workforce. Would they not? I can't get my head around that.
Well, I think now, if you look at that are being produced, they're not jobs that are being produced. They're not jobs that require and the school system has often, historically changed when the economy has changed. If you look, right now, if you look at the economy, we're over-graduating students from college. We're graduating students from high school, right? If that actually might public schools, that actually might make the workforce fit better into the economy that we're in right now.
So this is a big economic correction, and pretty soon we'll have the educated that we deserve.
Let's hope.
Education, but if we look at the larger economic picture in the United States, we are rapidly becoming like the third world, as we used to say, or developing world used to be. That is, with other countries, raw materials, products, and finished products. And there is no understanding in economics nowadays between supply of the linkage between supply and demand. We don't talk demand, and I don't think there's any appreciation of the importance of the ability of people to buy stuff.
And I think on the other side, I mean, in these what also you see throughout history in these times of economic and people fighting change is people fighting back and people trying to push back at the economy and what the education system is looking that like. And I think we're seeing that today in Portland.
Hey, you're listening
across the country.
Okay, you're listening to KBO show. The Abe and guest is radio show. Our guest is Adam Sanchez, who is representing the Portland Association of Teachers. Association is currently in a bargaining crisis-ridden bargain public school with the Portland Public Schools. If you have 2-3 questions or interest, please call us 231-8187. Let's go to the phones.
Let's do that. Who's next? Wade, good morning.
Hey there. Or if it is a conspiracy, or if you prefer a piracy.
Hey, what? I'm sorry.
I'm not going to let you get off on that because that's all you do. I'm sure you're saying this is a conspiracy. Okay, goodbye. Okay, Mr. Non-Conspiracy, they never exist. I'm going to quote from somebody in the school system. What would a strike look like? And this woman said, the land's ugly. And she said, quote, we prepared for the worst, for the best, hoped for the best. Now, if you spend plan, let's say you go to
No, okay. Sir, hey, is there a point in our future here? there a point in our future here? Is there a case you're trying to make here?
If you say that you plan for the worst and hope for the...
That's a true fact.
Wait a minute. You guess you spend all day planning for the worst, Joe, and end up with the best.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Peace, Mr. Talk Ego.
Wow.
What? Okay, all right. 2318187. We got a lot of people lined up. Who's next?
A couple callers ago, they talked about international rankings. So I did a little. According to the Program for International Student Assessment, we ranked behind 29 nations.
Mathematics.
This is the United States.
Wait, 29 nations?
Yes. In science, there are 22 nations who, and in reading, there are more than we do. And in reading, there are 19. Other nations who perform better than we do. Over the outcomes are largely East Asian nations. The Shanghai Autonomous Region of China, Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan, South Korea, Macau, and Japan.
That's kind of...
Those are the heavy hitters.
Yeah, I don't mean to be nationalistic about this, but it seems to me that what we're setting up for our nation is, in an effort to create a short-term advantage, the long-term destruction of our educational system and of our public's ability to understand and govern itself. And it really troubles me enormously. Beginning quite a few American history, and I also did sociology, I discovered that general student knowledge was kind of weak. I also ran into the fundamentalist Christian notions in the classroom. And I don't know, I mean, I don't think that comes up much in the high schools, but it really came up a lot. I remember, I probably told this story before, I'll tell it again. I remember in a sociology class, we were talking about culture and the development of culture and societies over time. And a student raised his hand, said, what if we find something that's wrong in the book? And I said, well, textbooks can be wrong. What specifically is here that the development of human beings goes back... And yet, he said, we know from the Bible that the entire universe is only 6,000 years old. And I said, well, I tried to use an argument of the redshift, the ability to demonstrate how far away objects in the celestial orbit, as it were, are. It made no difference because they had been indoctrinated. He had been indoctrinated. And then it turned out when I polled the students in that class, roughly 60% of them absolutely believed in a biblical version of the universe. So it's not just that we face a failure to educate people in the most fundamental stuff, but rather that we have an ideology among a lot that doesn't fit reality. And I think that public education has a responsibility to teach truth. And yet I see that it's increasingly... difficult and perhaps even unpopular to take on the role of science in education and to disallow mythologies as the notion of reality. And I wonder, did you want to even touch that with a 10-foot pole, or are you willing to talk about that?
I'll just say that you know, that actually hasn't been my experience. Uh-huh. That I'm constantly in awe by the students of this district and the students that I teach at Madison, and how thoughtful they are and how critical they are of the world and how willing they are to engage in critical conversations about climate change, about the war, spending money on wars while we're, impoverishing our schools at home. And I think that they rarely get the opportunity to do so. I think when we can provide that in, social studies courses in particular, but in any course, really, I think the younger generation at this point is eager for that, those kind of discussions. They want to talk about the economic crisis. They see the world. They see that they've been, they're growing up in a world that has mass incarceration, huge sexual violence, all kinds of global warming possibly threatening the future of the planet. These are the things that they want to discuss, and it. They want to be educated around racism. And in this campaign, especially the students in the Portland Student Union, who have been incredibly articulate from day one about not just supporting teachers in our contract campaign, but in putting forward their own demands for the schools that they feel they deserve, and they absolutely do.
Well, I'm so glad to hear you say that.
Yeah.
Really, I am.
You're cheering me up, which spoils my whole attitude. But I do appreciate it. If you're just tuning in, this is KBOO 90.7, your FM dial, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Our guest today, Adam Sanchez. And we're talking about the possibility of a strike by the teachers in Portland in conflict with the Portland Public School System. And we welcome your questions, 231-8187.
Let's go to the phones. Jackson, good morning.
Good morning, Abe and Joe. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning.
We have an issue down here in Chandler, Arizona. They closed down their plant. At least they greatly reduced their workforce down there because Intel is complaining about finding people qualified enough and educated enough to man these plants. Any woman, please excuse me. And based on hearing a lot of this in the last 2 days, starting from No Child Left Behind to this new system, it appears to me that the agendas of the adults are being placed ahead of the children. I'm all for good union. I'm all for good wages. But at what cost? Now, if these unions can say, we can train the next generation to surpass the last generation, we can train the next generation to become excellent computer IT people and put an excellent computer chip together, then I'm all for it. I mean, honestly, people, what parent doesn't want their children to do good regardless of their economic class?
Fair enough.
Rich kids, rich people want their kids to do a great job in school, like people who don't have access to money. So the question is, how is all of this, any of this, whether it's for the government or whether it's for the unions who have this backlash against the government because the teachers are afraid for the tenureship, how is any of this going to help my kids score high on their SAT score? That's my question.
Well, that's a good question. Let me say one thing before I even give Adam a chance to respond. The secret that I have discovered, the one consistent secret that I have discovered to student success, is the ability to read and reason. And any parent that has, beginning with the earliest years, routinely made a very positive experience out of like bedtime reading and the pleasure of books, picture books at first, and has spent time building a kind of library for their kids, whether it's just online or whether it's, in the real world of books, always will find that their children will do better in schooling and will do better in life. So I just wanted to throw that out there, man. And I'm not criticizing you. I have no idea what your life is like. But I'm
That's the issue here I'm pointing out is
yeah.
There has to be a certain environment in order to create. You have to create the right environment to culture that type of learning environment in the first place.
Oh, yeah.
We have to be in an environment where there isn't too much pressure because a lot of the parents, a lot of the teachers complain that if their parents aren't on board, the education is for naught. I mean, if you don't have parents out there in the correct socioeconomic situation in the first place, to where they can have the time to spend with their children to do these great things you just brought up. I mean, there are a lot of parents out there that are working two jobs. There are a lot of parents out there working 10, 15 hours, and they barely have the energy to spend on their children.
No, I think you're making a very good point. I want to give Adam a chance to respond. I want to thank you for making the points you've made.
Okay. Well,
and I wanted to respond to your first question because I think it's actually, in at least our contract battle, it's actually very simple, right? Class size reduction is one of four proven base reforms that the U.S. Department of Education has said improves student achievement. very simply. And the students who improve the most when class sizes are reduced are the students who need the most help, who often need the most help, that are our poor students, our black and brown students. And so very simply, you know, our proposal, the Portland Association of Teachers proposal, reduces class sizes much more than what the district is willing to do. They're essentially only willing to reduce what the state has mandated them to do, and they have the money to do it.
It's another amazingly good point. But class size, especially in relation to black and brown students, if someone can tell me that I will increase the class size and guarantee a high SAT score for basically what segregation was all about, black people having the opportunity for good education. And the second these black people came into these white schools to get a better education, it was white flight. And it also took, so it really doesn't matter up to a degree. I mean, what you say makes a good point about small class life, but it's all about the quality of what these children are being taught. The main issue is teach these black and brown kids how to make a really high SAT score.
Well, Let me respond to that, and then I'm gonna be letting you go. But I want to be clear about this. Teaching to tests serves a. There's no real evidence in the literature that the ability to perform well on an SAT test is anything more than a reflection of the overall learning. It's not necessary to do the testing to show to demonstrate the learning process, and that's really important. But I wanted, Adam, I wanted to turn. You said there were four things that improve the performance of students, and you said the first one and the most significant one was smaller class size. Do you have the other three offhand?
I
didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I'm curious.
Off the top of my head. Okay. Yeah, I haven't looked at that report in a while.
Okay.
Hey, Jackson, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate your thoughts. A little business here.
Yeah,
we'll go back to the phones. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, an alternative radio, Vandana Shiva, internationally renowned voice for sustainable development and social justice, speaks on seeds and freedom. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a report from Thailand, where the battle for a real people's democracy continues, and an encore broadcast of Dennis Bernstein's interview with celebrated author Amy Tan, who is battling Lyme disease. And at 11, Stage and Studio is the painter about his response to the built environment of Seattle.
Tennis, anyone? What? Sorry, go ahead.
Whiting tennis, yeah.
Yeah.
And his, I'm trying really hard not to make a bunch of tennis puns. Okay. I want everyone to know how hard I'm trying.
Sorry.
Okay. And his method of automatic drawing and how it relates to his three-dimensional structures. At 11:30 a.m., Joseph's guest will be Blake Schell, who recently became the director and curator of the Art Gym and Belushki Pavilion at Merrillhurst University. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
Yeah, and I want to mention again the great show, the docudrama, Mo is Shy, which I have heard part of it. It's really great. I want to recommend that you tune into it tomorrow between 6 and 8 p.m. here on KBOO. And we are talking about the possibility of a strike in the Portland Public Schools. We have with us Adam Sanchez, who is a teacher at Madison High School. And we're going to continue this discussion. I know a lot of you are hanging online, but did you want to say something else? Okay.
All right. Let's go to the phones.
Yeah.
Heidi, good morning.
Hey, this is Heidi, Adam's comrade from ISO. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Hi, Heidi.
I'm so happy to hear you on the radio because Adam's been working so hard in this struggle, and he always gives really good, succinct points. I've been organizing with him for a long time, so I just wanted to give him a shout-out.
Okay.
But, Adam, I wanted to also have you talk about, because you do this so well, I think what's important to think about, too, is the broader struggle that's going on with the privatization of the educational system, and also how the 1% is trying to profit off of privatizing the public education system. And one of the issues that hasn't been raised that needs to be talked about is there is a huge amount of investment by the 1% trying to go into the education system. And one of the things that they've talked about is that they believe that the education system now represents the final frontier that was once under public control, and they want to have it voluntarily opened up to make private profit and expand private enterprise. And so I think that's really something folks need to be paying attention to. Along with the issue, I think, in a kind of a roundabout way, the previous caller talked about the racialization of our school system as well. And those issues, that's a huge, probably a topic for a whole talk. in and of itself. But also the thing is that folks don't understand is that students now attend overwhelmingly segregated schools, and the majority of those are named for pioneers of the civil rights struggle, so that's kind of a weird little irony right there. But I just wanted to put those two issues on the table and kind of see if that can be put into the conversation, because I think those two things are really important components of what's going on, not only in Portland, but in the broader struggle nationally. And
So the two things you're interested in are essentially, first of all, the role of the 1% in changing the nature of the schooling system. And it's happening. And the second issue is the resegregation of public education.
Yeah, the way that that's happening and transforming things.
Okay.
So, yes, thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Hey, thank you for the call.
All right. Cool, thanks.
Adam, you and
well, I think we've talked a bit about the last callers talked a little bit about segregation in our school system. I want to address that a little bit. I think one of the first going through a process of change, and I think one of the first things that made me really proud to be a union last year to beat back this effort to close schools in the Jefferson High School. Of course, the only majority black high school in Oregon, in their cluster of schools, there have been more school closures in that cluster in the last 10 years than all the other clusters combined.
Really?
Yeah. And so that I think that was huge. It was the prelude to what we're seeing now with parents, students, and teachers working together for a fair contract. And Jefferson Cluster is actually one of the strongest clusters in terms of support we have from parents and from students. The students at Jefferson have been unbelievably phenomenal, advocating for their own needs and supporting teachers. But I think that stemmed from the fight that we had earlier on last year, fighting against the school closures in the Jefferson cluster. And one of the things in our proposal that the district is refusing to talk about is we want to add instructional days to priority schools right now, and focus schools, because right now they're actually they don't have the same amount of time because there's so much instructional time that's being put into extra professional development for these schools because they are focus or priority schools. And we're asking that that time be put back into the classroom. And the district is for closures. I think that's a huge part of this campaign. Parents just had an incredible press conference and community members a week or two ago calling for racial equity in the schools. And I think the PAT wants to work with parents and students to find real solutions to close the achievement gap and to close the opportunity gap for our black and brown students.
Thank you. Should we continue with the phones?
Yes. Who's next? Colin, good morning.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up, it seems like that the board, that the Portland Public Schools Board, if we can look at, who makes up the Portland Public Schools Board, mm-hmm. and what are the qualifications for being on the board, and reviewing that, because it seems like for the last, since the early 90s, it's just been a history of dysfunction and disconnect.
Well, they're elected positions by district, right?
Yes.
So that reflects, for example, the economic and social makeup of the city. For example, Steve Buell, I believe, is northeast Portland. Someone else would represent the Southwest and so on. But I think you raise an interesting question, partially because who has the time and the energy to devote to being a member of a school board? It's an incredibly, if you take it at all seriously, difficult job.
No, absolutely. And it's a non-paid job, to what I understand.
Right, and you're not paid for it.
Yeah. No, exactly. So it's going to attract either people who are retired, people who are really intelligent, or people who are self-aggrandizing.
Well, I don't know about the latter, but it's certainly a politically charged environment.
And I think that you bring up a really important point, because what we really desperately need is a school board that is going to fight with students, parents, and teachers, because we know that the ultimate culprit is the state that underfunds education. But unless we have a school board that's willing to advocate with us for the money we need, you know, that's not going to happen. And instead, unfortunately, this school board, at least up until now, has turned their sights elsewhere, have turned their sights on the teachers' union instead of where they should be.
Yeah, I totally agree. As a parent of a child at Jackson Middle School, it's been very disheartening to see that school board using power to, you know, tell me how the teachers union is not going with them, and then the teachers union basically has no voice except for maybe on the radio.
Let me get this straight. Are you saying that the schools send parents advocacy materials against the union?
Absolutely.
Well, I didn't know that. I guess I should have. I'm naive. I think that's disgusting. I think they should at best be silent.
No, last fall we got emails from the Portland Public Schools to the board saying, you know, we were in negotiations with the teachers union, and got, you know, they're, you know, we're having troubles with them, so but we want to let you know that it's not going to affect your kid. But it was, I mean, it's sort of these thinly veiled, rhetoric towards that it's their fault and not ours, and we're doing our best.
Wow, I'm really glad that you informed us of that. They can send everybody an email. And,
I think that's important to real. District has several full-time staff working on PR. They have direct access to all parents in email. And we don't have that as the Portland Association of Teachers. So, I really encourage people, if you want to hear the teacher side of the story, go to our website, pdxteachers.com, and follow us on Facebook for more up-to-date information, because it's very difficult to get our, don't have this, mountains of full-time staff, that work to get our message and out there.
You guys don't have your own PR flag?
Unfortunately not.
Portland Public Schools has, I don't know how many they have now, but when I was working there years ago, they had four or five people in the PR office.
Hey, listen, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, thank you.
And they've also got a labor consultant who's pulling down $15,000 a month.
Well, hey, why isn't it me? Can't I betray my class interest?
Good gig if you can get it.
I can negotiate meanly with the best of them. All right, let's get one more call in.
Okay. Oh, I guess not. Looks like we're out of time.
Out of time. I want to thank you, Adam Sanchez, for being here from the Portland Association of Teachers. And I want to once again reiterate, this show at least is pro-organized labor.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back at you next week.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Join us Friday, January 31st from 8 to 10 p.m. to celebrate the completion of the 2013 Artist in Residence. 13 artist Marisa Anderson will perform live, as well as play the record she recorded during the residency in its entirety. She'll also guest DJ, and we'll talk about the Artist in Residence experience. That's Marisa Anderson, live, Friday, January 31st, from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, Vandana Shiva, internationally renowned voice for sustainable development and social justice, speaks on seeds and freedom. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints features a report from Thailand, where the battle for a real people and an encore broadcast of Dennis Bernstein's interview with celebrated author Amy Tan, who is battling Lyme disease. At 11 on Stage and Studio is off today. Instead, Joseph Galavan hosts a special two-part Art Focus program. In the first half hour, Joseph interviews the painter and sculptor Whiting Dennis about his response to the built environment of Seattle and his method of automatic drawing and how it relates to his three-dimensional structures. At 11:30, Joseph's guest will be Blake Schell, who recently became the director and curator of the Art Gym and Belushki Pavilion at Marylhurst University. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a member? Become one now by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now here's Alternative Radio.
So in our seats is not just the memory of our ancestors, but the seven generations to come. Which is why it's about you, the little children in this hall. The seed is you. And as long as the seed is free, you are free. As long as the seed is healthy, you are healthy. As long as the seed has this amazing intelligence, that intelligence is your intelligence. And as long as the seed is grounded in place, you are grounded in your culture.
That's Vandana Shiva, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features Vandana Shiva on seeds and freedom. What's in a seed? Life itself. 10,000 years in India were the sites of the earliest sowing and harvesting of plants that had previously been gathered in the wild. It was a revolutionary development and made civilization possible. Since then, humans have been able to grow food and feed themselves. Today, that freedom embodied in seeds is threatened. Multinational corporations like Monsanto have radically changed the agricultural landscape. The imposition of intellectual property rights and patenting have been ways corporations have devised to put a price tag on seeds and to undo what has been for millennia a shared heritage. Around the world, they're in promoting sustainability and protecting the integrity of seeds. To talk about these issues is Vandana Shiva. She's an internationally renowned voice for sustainable development and social justice. She's director of the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Natural Resource Policy in New Delhi. She's the recipient of the Sydney Peace Prize and of the Right Livelihood Award, the Alternative Nobel Prize. She's the author of many books, including Water Wars, Soil Not Oil, and Making Peace with the Earth. She spoke at the annual Traditional Agriculture and Sustainable Living Conference held at Northern New Mexico College in Española, New Mexico. And now, Vandana Shiva.
I've been brought here by powers beyond me, and I'm grateful to them. Thank you to the grandmothers who are here. And the little children. These who have resisted being dissolved into an anonymous monoculture. I think our collective work is to get rid of some illusions that have dominated the planet's lives and the lives of different cultures and could